Hello everyone, this is Dr. Ole Henson on the Medicine of Success podcast. Our guest for tonight is a classmate of mine in college and my batchmate in med school in UST. He's a pulmonologist and a graduate of St. Luke's residency program and also practicing in St. Luke's Global and Quezon City. I think he's also a former head of the pulmonary department of the St. Luke's Medical Center. Our guest for today is Dr. Albert Nolido, right? We call him Dr. Abet Nolido. Welcome, Dr. Abet.
Welcome, Raul. Thank you for the invite.
Yes. How are you today? I think you're in the hospital now, right?
Yeah, I'm good. Presently, I'm on duty. Here in St. Luke's Global City, I'm assigned in the COVID ward today, and this my duty is a 24-hour duty. So okay. I've been here since 8 a.m.
So it's COVID. A 24-hour duty from 8 a.m.
Yes. To 8 a.m. the next day. Yes.
That's good, because remember, our topic for today is a day in the life of a frontliner, and I consider you a super frontliner because you're really taking care of COVID patients. Anyway, before we go there to the topic, I want you to say something about yourself, Dr. Abet, like your educational background and where you came from and everything.
Well, I am, I graduated in UST for BS Bio, batch 89. Then batch 93 also in UST for the college, graduating in the Faculty of Medicine and Surgery of UST. Then after that, I proceeded right away to residency. I took up internal medicine at St. Luke's Medical Center in Quezon City. So that was from 1995 to 1996 to 1998. Then I had my fellowship program for 2 years also in the Institute of Pulmonary Medicine in St. Luke's Medical Center. So, I'm a homegrown graduate of St. Luke's, no? From internal medicine to pulmonary medicine.
Okay, come to realize, Dr. Abet, we're actually in the same boat. We're both graduates of UST Biology 89. Medicine, UST Medicine 93, St. Luke's Medical Center. I was in ophthalmology from 96 to 98, and I also had my fellowship in oculoplastics, but outside St. Luke's. So I guess we're in the same batch, and I really know you were like a barcada in med school.
We practically grew up together.
Exactly, and I remember doing a lot of traveling with you in our barcada. So... So we were both barcadas in med school and college, right, Bet?
Yes, I know you're. I consider you one of my dear friends since we were together since 1985
till now, actually. Yeah. So, and plus you're an Athenian. You forgot to say that you're in high school, so you're full-blooded Athenian, right?
Basic education, grade school and high school. I graduated in Ateneo de Manila. After Ateneo, I transferred to the Pontifical University of Santo Tomas.
Okay. So now, why you went into internal medicine, and why did you go into pulmonary medicine?
As I was during my residency, during my training, usually you take those 3 years and get to know what you're really interested in. And during those 3 years of training in internal medicine, I got interested in critical care. I was interested in treating patients, really reviving the critically ill patients. So that interested me the most. I find fulfillment in really pulling over or treating or curing those who are really critically ill. And one of the best ways to achieve that, to do that, is to get into pulmonary medicine, because it's actually pulmonary medicine and critical care. So it goes hand in hand. You should be handling ICU patients and ventilated respiratory failure patients and ventilated patients. So that's the reason why I got into pulmonary medicine.
So basically, Dr. Abbott, you really love what you do, right? You're passionate about it, right?
Yeah, it's because I find fulfillment in treating critically ill patients. It could be frustrating. It could be really frustrating because some patients are really very ill that you can't pull them off. It could be depressing at times. But once you get to pull off someone and let him have more years in his life, it gets to be really fulfilling.
Yeah, your specialty is pulmonary medicine and critical care, and which is good. And I'm glad that you're passionate about your specialty, because you know, if you love what you do, it's basically not work, especially now that you're in the wards with COVID patients. You're really applying what you've learned, and your passion now is with your patients.
Yeah, especially now. No, I'm already 53 years old, and I was willing to go back to going on duty at this age because of the present situation. No? So if you don't love what you do, you won't be doing this anymore. I mean, I'm supposed to be out of this or graduated from this kind of work. I'm supposed to be a consultant already. But because of this situation, I still volunteer to do this. So it's really something you have to be interested in for you to be going through all this again.
Dr. Abbott, I'm so proud of you. You're our frontliners. You're one of our frontliners, and you're passionate about your specialty of pulmonary medicine to the point of you're volunteering yourself to be in the front lines to treat all these patients that need your help. So anyway, that's your journey from high school to pulmonary medicine. Now let's go to your everyday things that you do when you go to St. Luke's, where you treat COVID patients. Like in your day, like for example today, how do you start it? First of all, in the house, do you have to prepare something? Like what do you do
before you leave? It starts actually from even the night before. I make sure I get to have good rest. I try to sleep early. And I make sure that I'm rested before I go into duty. I make sure I have a full meal. My first meal, my breakfast should be a full meal. And I psych myself on going through the day. It's like going into, I'm very sports-minded. It's like going to battle when it comes to going to a game. You psych yourself that you'll be going against someone or going against something. In this case, COVID patients. So you prepare yourself physically, and you prepare yourself psychologically. Then you prepare everything: your baon, your drink, the Beroka. I try to supplement myself with vitamins to be able to be well equipped physically in facing the day. So it's more of a psychological build up. I try to psych myself well before I go into duty.
That's nice what you said when you had that analogy of sports and your what you're doing now, because I'm also a sports person, as you know.
Yeah, I know.
We played a lot of sports during our college and medical days, and we really psych ourselves before the game, and we really build up our physical strength before going into the game. And just like you now, you're going to battle, right? So you're psychologically prepared, you're physically prepared, because you should have a strong immune system. Is that right,
yeah,
Dr. Abbott?
Definitely.
So you do...
Your preparation even starts the night before when you have to sleep well. But sometimes to get to sleep well because you anticipate on the things you'll be doing the following day. But I really try to have a good night's sleep. I take supplements for me to be able to have a good sleep the night before.
Okay. So now when you wake up, you have a good breakfast, a full breakfast, you said, and then of course you dress up and things that you have to do. And then before you leave the house, do you have like a routine or a habit that you do before you leave the house?
Not really, no. Leaving the house, no. There's I just prepare my, again, as I said, I prepare the bawon. I prepare the stuff I have to bring in the hospital. I make sure that my masks are ready, my PPEs are ready. I have a backpack with me for prepare my stuff to prepare myself for a 24-hour day duty.
Okay, so who supplies your PPE? The hospital?
I have my own. I buy my own, but the hospital also provides PPEs, no? So when you get to the hospital, they provide. I have my mask, no? But they also have their mask. They prepare the. They have the variety of their body suits, the pro gowns, the caps, the shoe okay. covers, and the goggles. So all those are prepared by, are given to you or provided by the hospital.
Okay, so when you arrive in the hospital, you're still not in your PPE yet. You're just in your mask.
Yes, I'm just in my scrubs.
Ah, scrubs. And then, is there a room in the hospital where you change for the PPE?
Yes. When you go to the COVID ward, no, there's a PPE donning room. So there's protocol when it comes to entering a COVID ward. You go to the PPE donning room, and there's are 8 steps actually, and we follow those 8 steps, no, until you're fully donned with a full PPE. Then once you're done with that, then you're ready to see the patients. No? And first I go to the nurse's station and get all the charts and review all the patients, the charts of the patients before I start seeing the patients one by one.
So when you enter the COVID ward, you're already in your PPEs before you review the chart, or the chart first and then the PPEs?
We wear the PPE first because the nurse's station is actually already in the ward. So the PPE donning room is just before you get into the nurse's station. So you don your PPEs first, then you go to the nurse's station, and that nurse's station is actually covered by cellophane, no? By plastic. So you enter that, you review all your charts. So when you leave the nurse's station, that plastic area, you have to wash your hands again or put alcohol on your hands and gloves before you start seeing patients one by one.
So I can imagine the ward, Dr. Abbott, no? Because I also trained in St. Luke's, so I know the wards there. So these wards are full of PPEs. They're like astronauts running all around.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, all of you in the COVID ward are actually in body suits.
Okay.
When you say about the hazmats, the body suits, yeah.
Those body suits, full PPE wardrobe, right?
Yes.
And, okay, you go to the ward, because that's the ward. Like, in a day, like today, how many COVID patients do you have? Is it okay to tell us, the listeners, that?
Roughly around, we have around 20 plus.
20 plus. That's a lot of patients.
Yeah.
So you're the only one on duty, or you have 2 or 3 more consultants on duty?
For the COVID ward, I'm the only one on duty. There's another consultant who's assigned in the non-COVID patients. And there's another consultant assigned in the ICU where the more severe COVID cases would be admitted.
So I'm you're in the COVID regular ward.
Then there's the ICU wherein there are COVID patients who are on severe pneumonia, and there's another consultant who's handling the non-COVID patients.
Okay. So now you're in the ward, you're in full PPEs, you review the charts, you're going to make rounds on all those 20 patients?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, interesting. Yes. So you're basically you're already exposed. It's like going to battle and with your armor. It's What's your psychology? Because I myself, as an ophthalmologist, actually we closed our clinic. It's been closed for almost 2 months, and I haven't seen a patient since, because it's we're just an ambulatory surgery center. And you're volunteering. And what's your psychology or mental state when you go through that ward, looking and checking on all those 20 patients, COVID patients?
Give you a background, though. When this COVID pandemic started, or when things really went bad for the country, I was one of the first doctors who saw the severe pneumonia caused by COVID from the very start. No, I already had 3 patients then. No, during that time, it was scary because we still didn't know what we're dealing with. Then you get to hear news that doctors start dying because of infection from COVID from their patients. No. So during that time, it was really scary. As you know, that one of my patients is actually a batchmate, no? And that was really a very, I should say, scary point in my practice. But after that, when we started knowing more, we started knowing. Putting up protocols, top cut measures on preventing infections of healthcare workers. We started being more confident that what the protocols we set up are good enough to protect us from COVID infections. So now after what, a month, we come in with full confidence that as long as we don't break that protocol, we're pretty much confident that we can last the day being clean. But initially, admittedly, it was scary because we just didn't know what new virus we're dealing with.
Okay, so it's more of the mental toughness in the beginning. And then when the protocols were set by St. Luke's, it's just more of the trust in the protocols. And then
I have to commend the hospital leadership that we really acted fast. We have to act fast because you already get to hear a lot of doctors falling ill because of infection from COVID. And they work 24 hours, 24/7. Just to set up that protocol and set up policies to protect our doctors now. So luckily in St. Luke's, we get to have infections of doctors, but nothing serious.
That's nice to know. Yeah, I remember you mentioning our classmate, Dr. Al DeGorco. He passed away due to COVID, and he was your patient.
He was, those were depressing times because, again, we didn't know what we're dealing with. It was something different. During the first week, I was assigned in Quezon City. It was like a war zone in the ER. That was the first time I've been practicing for the past 20 years. That was the first time I saw so much ARDS. You can see patients deteriorating right in front of your eyes. So it was really a war zone. And we had to learn fast to prevent this progression or this increase in mortality and in COVID patients. So we had to learn fast and get all the information we could, so that we could treat the succeeding patients, because it was spreading like wildfire.
So, Dr. Abbott, you think this is a real thing? Because people say it's just a virus, you know, it's a flu virus and it's nothing. But what do you think of the scale of the situation?
This is the real thing. This is definitely this is something different. As I said, I haven't seen this kind of situation or this kind of havoc which a virus, a single virus could do, no? It is a virus, but it's a different kind of virus. It really infects a lot of people. The transmission rate is fast, and the progression of disease is also fast. So we really have to act fast to treat all these patients.
Okay, well, let's go to the nice part. That was kind of depressing, but we had to tell the listeners what you do in a day, in the day of a life of frontliner. But just to be, you know, candid, when you eat your lunch or dinner, do you have to remove all the PPEs? And I just want to learn. I just want to know.
For me, no. I leave the ward, I remove my body suits, all the pro gowns, and I'm back to my scrubs. Mm-hmm. Then I go to an isolated place like my clinic and eat alone. So I eat alone. I sometimes eat with my co-consultants, co-doctors. But we have to maintain at least a 2-meter distance while eating.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
It could be a lonely meal. I would go to the canteen, and the setup of the canteen right now is one person per table, mm-hmm. and each table is around again two meters apart. So the tendency is for you to finish your meal fast, because you're not talking to anyone anyway. It's a lonely meal.
So, after your lunch, and then you still do rounds with the COVID patients? How many rounds do you do in a day?
I review the census. Then I go back to the patients whom I haven't seen during the morning. So you complete your rounds. Then after that, once you have completed all the patients, I go back to my clinic and review my census. What labs to follow up, what patients to look out for, to watch out for. And after that, you wait for calls. Wait for calls if there are certain...
You mean calls in the ER?
Calls in the ER. I also handle the ER. Mm-hmm. So you wait for those.
So you're just in the hospital, in the clinic?
Yeah.
All alone?
When I'm done, I go back to my clinic and stay there. I'm alone here, yeah. I'm actually in my clinic now.
So you're on duty now?
Yeah.
Okay. So tomorrow, you're going to be done in the morning at 8 a.m. What's the routine that you do before you leave the hospital?
Yeah, I do my finishing touches, follow up what I have to follow up, then complete my census. Because I have to turn over that census to the next consultant who'll be going on duty.
Okay.
Then after that, I go home. I make sure I don't interact with anyone first. Take a shower. You make sure you separate your workloads, and you ask your help. You ask some of your helper here in the Philippines. You have your helper to wash that load separately.
Well, I all I thought all along was that you have your shower rooms in the hospital before you leave?
For those staying in the COVID wards 24 hours, I'm a consultant already, so I'm more of a backup. The residents stay, medical residents, stay in the COVID wards 24 hours. So they're in their body suits for 24 hours. They are the ones who eat with wearing their body suits. So before they leave the COVID ward, there's a room there that you have to take a shower first before you get out of the COVID ward. So these are the doctors who really stay in the COVID ward for 24 hours. These are really the frontliners. If you talk about ward, these are the ones facing the enemy 24 hours. I'm sort of more of the colonel already.
No, I think you're a general.
No, the general is more an admin.
Yeah, the general just upstairs, they're just monitoring. But nevertheless, you also have to be proud of the residents. They are the real heroes.
I'm
nurses.
I take my hats off to the residents and nurses for them working for 24 hours and facing all this this virus that we are facing with. And for them to be brave enough and handle this and be one of the frontliners, really the frontliners. So I really take my hats off to them. And when I go around, they're also psyched up to contribute and do their jobs as residents.
I think not only that, Abet. Plus the custodial, all the staff of the hospital, they're all heroes for me.
Actually, war. It's really a war.
Yeah, it's a war. It's a war zone, and we're fighting an invisible enemy, which you cannot see. So when you get home, you remove your clothes, they're separately washed, and then when do you interact with your, for example, your children or whoever in the house is?
After taking a shower and settling down, I get to interact with them already. But we practice social distancing even at home. Mm-hmm. No physical contacts. No beso-beso. We eat together, but we have a meter apart while eating the dining table. So we practice social distancing.
Okay, so including the house, and then once your duty today, when is your next duty?
Here in Global, it's every 5 days, no? But actually, tomorrow, I'll be on duty at St. Quezon City in the COVID ICU. But in St. Quezon City, it's not a 24-hour duty. No? So, because we have pulmonary fellows there who handles the ICU. So I'll be tomorrow after this, I'll just rest for a while and go to Quezon City to see all the ICU patients, COVID ICU patients there. And that's for 1 week straight.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Every day.
All I thought, Dr. Abet, is after your duty, you quarantine yourself for 14 days and then you go to duty after 14 days.
No. For residents, they go on duty for 1 week, then they rest for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. For me, here in Global, it's every 5 days. Again, it's a matter of we trust the system already, the protocol. That as long as you're in PPE, you'll be safe. To give you a concrete example, the pulmonary fellows in St. Quezon City went on duty for 2 months in the COVID ICU. For 2 months. Then during their exit swab, all of them are negative. You can just imagine these are the patients that really have a high viral load. They're ventilated, so aerosol is there. The can just imagine how much aerosolized virus could be going around the ICU. So these fellows, pulmonary fellows, were exposed for 2 months. And when they had the exit swabs, all of them were negative.
Wow, so, that's the nice matter system. Then,
as long as you don your PPE and you don't break the protocol, I think we're pretty safe. So, yeah. The problem lang before when it started, that's why a lot of the healthcare workers got sick, because we weren't prepared. We didn't know what this was. And we didn't have the proper PPEs then.
Nice. That's a very nice story of your day, a day in the life of a frontliner. And not only that, there are other frontliners that have the worst situation that you. I didn't know that. So these are the residents, the fellows, and I commend them for that. Now, what are the important lessons or experiences can you give our listeners regarding this pandemic, Dr. Abbott? Any thoughts like the pattern or the curve or the quarantine? Any thoughts on this?
Again, this virus came to us as a surprise, but we were able to act well. No? We were able to act well. I'm not a fan of this government, but it is a time for unity, and I pray that the IATF formulates systems well, and decides on the country, because we will be depending on them. And as long as we follow what the government, the IATF, would ask us to do, we should follow, because there's someone has to lead for us to flatten that curve. No. So I just want the citizenry to be united in this battle against the virus, and for now, as I was serving, the severity of cases, the number of cases, are actually going down. We don't have. Again, we get to treat patients more now. We get to heal patients more now. So that means we're doing something right. You know? The government is doing something right. The medical society is doing something right by doing its proper research and doing those protocols and stopgap measures. So this could be, we should be ready for a long haul. But we should accept that, again, you would always hear the new normal. Then you have to accept what the new normal is and help the country in fighting this virus. Again, we have to be united in this and follow what our assigned leaders, follow their directives, and hopefully we can slowly get back our usual, but expect that things will be different even after we have controlled this virus or this situation. There will be a lot of different changes for the succeeding months, maybe even a year.
Okay, very well said, Dr. Abbott Nolido. And before we go, maybe you can tell them your clinic in St. Luke's, you know, if they want to consult you, especially with relatives who will have all these problems with COVID or any other pulmonary problems.
Our clinic now are closed, no? But St. Luke's offers telemedicine. telemedicine, so you could call the St. Luke's Concierge, the St. Luke's Concierge, and ask yourself, ask to be scheduled to any doctor you want, and you will be guided on how to operate on doing teleconsults. So far, it's teleconsults now. I don't know yet when the hospital will open its medical arts building, but for now, it's more of teleconsults. So again, St. Luke's is kind enough to put up this system for us doctors, because as you know, we can't rely, we can't treat COVID patients alone. There are other patients who need our help who are non-COVID. And there are those who have chronic illnesses who have to see their doctors regularly on an outpatient basis. So again, call St. Luke's, call St. Luke's Concierge, and they will help you find your doctor or give the schedule of your doctor and help you operate on telemedicine.
Thank you, Dr. Abet Nolido, for being our guest today. The title, which is A Day in the Life of a Frontliner, and I'm proud, my classmate, passionate about his craft, is now a frontliner, and he's I'm really proud, Dr. Abet. Huh?
Thank you, Raul.
Yeah.
Well, we, again, as I said, we grew up together, and we went to different paths. You got into ophthalmology, I got into internal medicine, but in the end, we're still together, being medical practitioners.
Okay, and for
okay,
that,
thank you very much for the invite, Raul.
Thank you, and watch out also for other episodes. That's all for today. Thank you, Dr. Abet Nolido, and keep safe, stay safe, and God bless to our listeners.
Thank you.